got all the data, looked through it. In order to get the GLD, the shares outstanding, the market cap, back to an 11% overvalued state versus historic average, we're looking at gold 3,700 basically over the next year. The rate cutting cycle is like a year. So over the next 12, 13 months, I'm looking for gold 3,700.
That was a lot of great info, but I have a lot of questions and I want to start again with GLD. I just wrote these numbers down. You said there's 400 million shares outstanding. And now that was in 2020. Is that correct?
There's 300 mil outstanding now. In 2020, there were about 430 million.
That is crazy to me. I have no idea. Garrett Goggin, how you doing?
Hey, good, Andy. Thanks for having me. Nice to talk.
No, thanks for coming on board here. I've did a little bit preliminary research, well, actually a lot of preliminary research, and I really like how you start with a macro thesis on the metals prices, and then you dial it down really to the micro with some specific companies. And so let's start with the macro first. Gold's looking to break out, or it has broken out. It seems like it's forming a new base here around 2,500. What's your projections and what's your thesis on this breakout and where we're going?
Yeah. I'm a fundamental analyst from the Boston institutional community. I'm a CFA, MBA. I go through the 10Qs, I go through the MD&As, make economic forecasts based off, the grade and the recovery and the costs in order to generate, values for, the equities that I follow. So it's all database and evidence based. And then, a lot of these interviews, I've done a few of them. And it's funny because some of the videos are very popular, getting hundreds of thousands of views. And a lot of it is like doom and gloomers, gold's going to 50,000. They tell a good story, but there's no facts or data or evidence behind it. And, I like math. I like, probability and statistics. And, in writing my latest report, the GP10X, I was looking at the gold price and I was looking at GLD shares outstanding, right? So the GLD is the major gold ETF. Back in 2020, the shares outstanding, the GLD were around 437 million shares outstanding. Now, there are only 300 million shares outstanding. And the GLD is a measure of investor sentiment, right? When people want gold, a lot of them opt for the GLD. So when the shares outstanding really spikes up, it usually corresponds with the market top. So looking at this GLD measure, the shares outstanding that are each equal to 1/10 of an ounce of gold are 30% less than they were back in 2020. And the other thing that's going on right now, if you look back to 2020, Fed started cutting rates in 2019. They cut rates from 5.25% in July 2019 all the way down to 25 basis points in April of 2020. And Powell's already signaled. He's like, listen, inflation has slowed down. I would love to argue with that. I haven't seen inflation slow down. It's just prices are higher than the 100% higher than they were 3 years ago. He's seeing inflation slow down and he's seeing the job market slow down. He basically signaled to the market, they're going to be cutting rates in September. So you have a Fed rate cutting cycle aligned with investors not caring about gold. Gold's poised for a major move. The last time the Fed started cutting rates, gold went from 1,200 to 2,000, a little bit over 2,000 in about a year. If you go back to 2008, gold ripped 200% in the years following 2008 as the Fed cut rates and poured on the stimulus. So using the GLD shares outstanding and market cap, which has a very high correlation to the price of gold, it's like a 92% correlation. If you look at the average market cap of the GLD since 2004 inception, whenever it trades above 10% above its historic average value, that marks a peak in the gold price measured by GLD shares outstanding. So I got all the data, looked through it. In order to get the GLD, the shares outstanding, the market cap, back to an 11% overvalued state versus historic average, we're looking at gold 3,700 basically over the next year. The rate cutting cycle is like a year. So over the next 12, 13 months, I'm looking for gold 3,700.
That was a lot of great info, but I have a lot of questions and I want to start again with GLD. I just wrote these numbers down. You said there's 400 million shares outstanding. And now that was in 2020. Is that correct?
There's 300 mil outstanding now. In 2020, there were about 430 million.
That is crazy to me. I have no idea. I knew there was a lot of contraction, if you would, but I had no idea it was that high. Yeah. So I want to push on that. Why?
Why are GLD shares outstanding? See, there's two factors that drive the GLD price, because when assets move in, right, you need to increase the shares outstanding, or else, the price would go up, reflecting the assets going in versus the gold price. So it's the gold price that is pushing the GLD value higher, and it is the ounces held pushing the GLD value higher. But quite simply, investors don't care. Investors don't care about gold. I'm an analyst. Like, I'm getting amped here. Like, in my GP 10X portfolio, I've got three companies that are up 150% year to date. Half of them are up more than 50% year to date. Like, I see it percolating, but I don't see that reflected in the investor sentiment. The average person is not interested in gold. They don't see it as a good opportunity. For whatever reason, they're not worried about the devaluation of the dollar, or, protecting themselves for inflation. But when gold peaks out, it's like a mania. It gets wacky. They say there's no gold fever like gold fever. Everyone's going to be talking about it. Everyone's going to own it. Everyone's going to talk about all the money that they're making in gold stocks. And is quite frankly, we are nowhere near that right now. We're at the exact opposite end. Even though gold's at an all-time high right now of $2,500 an ounce. It's crazy. And then, do you know, ever hear of the turtle traders in Chicago? Yeah. All right. So the turtles, right? They got 100 kids. They're like, listen, you got to follow these simple rules. And, if you're able to do it, you can be a very successful trader like, me, Richard Dennis. Yes. Did only three or four kids were able to follow it, because nobody believed that these rules were right, because there are only like two or three rules. It was buy at a 20-day high, short at a 20-day low, keep your stops tight. And then what happens is you lose like 95% of your trades, or scratch 95% of your trades. But those 5% of the trades that really rip higher, they make your whole year. We saw it in cocoa bumping against its highs earlier this year that it went up 3x. We're looking at gold right now bumping up against its highs. In the next move, it could be like that explosive one. It's coming. It might not be this one, but it's coming, just the way that it keeps bumping up against its highs.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with everything you said, but let's go back to GLD. Is that an indicator of that this is not, and I think this is another part of the bullish case, that this is not U.S. retail investor driven?
Well, the rise in the gold
price of gold. Yes.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. No, it's increased institutional demand. Central banks around the world have been buying gold. It's large large entities, and the GLD represents retail interest. We can see by the shares outstanding that people don't have that much of their assets invested in gold right now, because the shares outstanding is 30% lower than it was in 2020.
Yeah. Okay. So let's take that, since none of the retail investors are interested in gold. What's going to take for them to become interested in gold? Is it the retail investors going to come first, or is it going to be the institutional investors, or does gold just have to have a massive breakout, meaning going up to over 3K in order for people to become interested again?
Yeah, I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Please.
Institutional investors are trend followers. They're late to the game. They will always chase performance. The sectors that have done the best, those are the sectors that institutional investors are going to invest in because they've done well, and you need exposure to it because they don't want to report to their clients after gold goes up a tremendous amount. Gold stocks go up a tremendous amount. You know, where were you? Why weren't you invested in gold? So they're going to be late to the game. There is big central banks are buying gold right now. The institutional money in gold equities right now is extremely small. But as, you know, the market heats up and gold stocks performing better, institutions are going to jump in the party. And then retail is always late, you know, regarding AI. Like when you see it all over the headlines and all over the papers, that's when retail's buying. And that's probably, you know, a market peak, you know, not the time. And retail investors don't care about stuff until people are talking about it. But I don't blame institutions and I don't blame retail. Like gold stocks have sucked for, if you look at Newmont and Barrick, their stock prices is the same price it was 20 years ago. And the price of gold 20 years ago was $400 an ounce. And now it's $2,500 an ounce. The deal is when inflation pushes gold higher, it pushes mining costs higher as well. So the gold miners trade in the margins that are, I don't know, what are they, like 50% right now? Trades between 40% and 70% at a peak. So, you know, the margins are the same as they were 20 years ago, which is why the miners haven't moved. And yeah, I don't necessarily blame institutions or retail for not being interested in, but there are times when these gold mining stocks really outperform. The big guys will go up 2X, they'll go up 3X. And we're at one of those times right now.
Yeah. So, and follow that, I want to talk specifically the stocks here in a minute, but let's say we have a market sell-off, and it seems like everything is pointing towards that, a recession, if you would. Market sell-off maybe this month in September, correct me if I'm wrong, is traditionally bad for the market, as well as October.
Yep.
What happens to the stocks then, the gold stocks specifically, and would you be a buyer now, or would you wait for the sell-off, if you would?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm on the same page regarding that. Whenever the Fed cuts rates, there's a recession that follows, you know, the SOM indicator with, jobless claims, you know, going up against the 30-day averages being triggered. Everything's indicating a recession is going to happen. Every time the recession happens, the Fed cuts rates, and then the market crashes. It crashed in 2000, it crashed in 2008, it crashed in 2019. And, you know, right now it's at a high. It hasn't gone down tremendously yet. And then what happens is the Fed has to come in and basically double their balance sheet, which pushes gold 100% higher, like 2X over the next few years. Every time the yield curve is inverted, like you can look at the yield curve 10-year minus 2-year. The simple one is Fed funds rate versus the 2-year. Every time the yield curve has been inverted, a recession happened, the Fed cut rates, the Fed doubled their balance sheet and gold doubled over the past few years. But one of the last things, in 2020, it was a really quick, sort of, market pullback. It was a crash. It was scary, but it came back really quickly. 2008 was an absolute disaster. Mining stocks went absolutely smoked. I remember, Wheaton Precious, silver Wheaton trading for like $2, Franco, you know, trading for like $3-$5. You thought the whole system was going down. People were it had no tie to any value. You know, it was just people were getting liquid. But this thing right that's happening right now, everything seems to be happening faster and faster, and inflation's a lot worse than it was a few years ago. And you know, like you could see a market sell off, but I could see it coming back very quickly. Whereas the market continue rising, but on an inflation adjusted basis. Like it hasn't gone anywhere, you know, in 10 years. So like it's value of the S&P being higher in a couple of years, but inflation adjusted, you're not making any money. Inflation adjusted, the place to be is in gold and gold stocks. And you know, I've got the golden portfolio, which covers, call them inflation protection machines, a royalty industry. The royalties are by far the best way to play gold for many reasons. I can get into that in a little bit. And then the GP10X, which are smaller explorers, developers, miners. In the explorers, a lot of times they don't represent good investments, but there's certain time in the cycle that they represent amazing opportunity where they're going to go off 10X, 50X, crazy stuff. And we haven't seen anything like that in got over in decades, you know?
Yep. So,
you know, Vancouver, the smaller stocks are, I think they're ready to move. And that's why I started the gold portfolio and the GP10X.
Let's talk about that. Then let's jump into it. What are some of your handful of favorite companies? Let's start with some of the juniors, the explorers, if you would. I just spoke with a bunch of them. I was at the Rural Investment Symposium and I spoke with a handful of them there. But I'm going to another conference here with John Fenech in your neck of the woods, by the way, and there'll be a bunch more there. Let's, well, before you talk about how do you evaluate these and then give us a few names that you really like.
All right. It's all about grade and people for me. Grade is the highest correlation to economics. If you don't have grade, you're not able to produce, profitably produce gold. There's a lot of miners out there that chug along at break-even production due to low grade, and they pay out their management salaries. It ends up being dilutive, you know, and they just keep on issuing shares. Core mining, a lot of people, when you think of silver, it was like, oh, core mining. It's like core mining split adjusted was like $250 per share 20 years ago. Now it's traded $3 per share. Because it's break even, their Rochester mine is one of the lowest grade operations in, you know, the world. And they just constantly dilute. Management and backers get rich and shareholders get shafted. So I watch that very closely. I'm friendly with Peter McGaugh, one of the world's famous silver geologists who founded Mag Silver in his first drill hole. And he shared with me a paper called Archie's Rule. And it was about simple back of the envelope calculation that geologists can use in the field to figure out whether any project is going to be economic or not. And basically all it was you need 2x NSR as operating cost. NSR is your revenue, your net smelter royalty, your operating costs are on a per tonnage basis. And you know, if you look at, you know, the average underground tonnage cost, it's like $250 an ounce in Mexico and US for some of the silver miners. So you need $500, you know, dollars of value from your revenue. And the only thing that drives that revenue figure higher is grade, right? Because, you know, you got more ounces on a per ton basis. Your costs are relatively fixed on a per ton basis. The only way you can move the needle, increase profits is by having higher grade deposits. So, you know, I basically follow drill results on a daily basis. And then I'm able to take those drill results. I'm able to estimate a resource. I'm able to use, comparables from nearby mines in order to build an economic estimate to figure out what the company's worth on a NAV basis and compare it to, you know, what it's trading at now. And I've never seen, you know, opportunity like this where you can pick up, you know, 5 million ounces of gold for, you know, 30 mil market cap. Just investors don't care. I don't know. Some of my favorites, I really follow people. There's value creators in the industry that actually care about the share price that are, you know, owners of the companies that they manage. And there's a lot of the industry that doesn't own any shares. I would say greater than 50%. You've got, it's all based out of Vancouver. It's all based out of Toronto. They're friendly. You got a lot of incestuous deals where they're taking care of each other and they're screwing shareholders. You know, one deal that just happened recently that I was happy to see, Vizsla Silver just spun off Vizsla Royalties. Vizsla Royalties is trading about 50% NAV right now. Just started trading last week, but they spun it off to shareholders, right? Every shareholder of Vizsla Silver got a third of a share of Vizsla Royalties. And, you know, this is value creation. Miners can, you know, share value via dividends, share buybacks, or, you know, accretive, growth with the profits of the shareholder equity that they generate. But a lot of miners also, they don't spin out projects to shareholders. They'll hold these projects in their portfolio. And then when silver rips, they'll dump the whole thing on the public. Shareholders usually don't get anything. So I was happy to see Vizsla, you know, do that and share that Vizsla Royalties with shareholders. Because, you know, one of my greatest opportunities and one of my greatest companies that went up like an astronomical amount of like 45,000%, it was Silvercrest Mines. Eric Thier. He's a great guy. He is a value creator. He's cheap. He doesn't like spending a lot of money in CapEx. He just built Litius Business Silvercrest Metals for $130 million, built it on time, on budget. They paid back their 40 mil debt in less than a year. They got 100 mil in the bank. But what happened was his previous company, Silvercrest Mines, got bought by First Majestic back in 2015. And the thing that attracted me to Silvercrest Mines was the profits they generated from their high grade deposit, Santorellina. And the company was trading at a significant valuation. It was trading at like 25%. It generated 25% free cash flow. So, I had to get involved. And then what happened was First Majestic recognized that value too. They came in, they bought it out. And then negotiations, Eric's like, listen, you can have everything, but let me keep this little like 5 mile square project in the middle of Santorellina's property for myself. And Keith, Neumeier, he's like, yeah, all right, good. We want Santorellina. You keep that. Eric went up there. He was visiting there over the previous few years. And it was an old mine called Litius Business. And he had all the old historic documents. And it used to produce like 1,000 grams a ton, average grade. And he kept it and kept drilling. And basically from day one, they kept slim and massive high-grade intercepts. A little narrow, 3 meters, 2 meter, 1 meter. But just, 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 grams per ton. And then the stock started trading at six and it went all the way up to 1250 a few years ago. It was absolutely insane. So grade and people. And then there was another one, Calvern, which is owned by Blaine McAllister and Doug Forrester. These guys are basically private equity guys. They started a company called Newmarket Gold. Newmarket, it was basically around the same time as Silvercrest. And these guys had, $100 million and they were looking, they were gold guys. So they're looking in the gold industry. They waited a couple of years, but they found a Australian company called Crocodile Gold. Crocodile Gold owned a few assets. They own Cosmos. They own Stalwell. And then they owned Fosterville. And Fosterville's a monster. And so what attracted me to that company is the free cash flow generation. It was trading again at a 25% free cash flow yield. And when you invest in companies like that are extremely profitable, good things happen. Dividends are paid, shares are bought back, creative deals happen. So good things happen to companies that generate a lot of profits. Bad things happen to companies that don't generate a lot of profits because they dilute. But what happened was Newmarket ended up, started drilling at Fosterville. They started finding ridiculously high gold grades. It got snapped up by Kirkland. Kirkland went in there. They found like the Swan Zone. The grades were like through the roof, like 20, 30, 40 grams a ton. They generated tremendous profits. And then Kirkland was taken out by, I think, Agnico. And then if you held your shares all the way through again, it's like a 50,000% return. And those guys are running Calibre now. And Calibre, they paid $100 million for two assets in Nicaragua. A lot of people are like, oh, Nicaragua. But it's like, yeah, they got them at a tremendous discount. And they generated a lot of free cash from these assets. And then they bought, they got the Valentine mine up in Newfoundland that they're developing that should begin production, very soon. These guys, they own shares in their companies. They're interested in profits. And, these are the companies that you need to invest your money in.
Yeah, thank you for that. And you really answered it very holistically in what's important to you in evaluating a company, which I would agree, it's really the management and how much they care about me.
Yeah.
And then the grade. But then also you gave us some good companies, the listeners, some really good companies to consider. But let me switch here, and thank you. Let me switch here real quick, and I agree with you. Why are you such a fan of royalty companies? And I'm a huge fan, and I just really recently discovered them a couple of years ago. And they've been around, for decades. But why are you such a fan of royalty companies now?
Five reasons. Number one, they have fixed costs. They will go into a project. They'll say, what was it? Franco Pierre Lassan went into Goldstrike and they found it in an Elko Gazette in the 1980s. Hey, 2% NSR and they were down to the last $2 million. It's like, here, we'll pay you $2 million for that royalty. And then Goldstrike was, minimal mine, producing 50,000 ounces a year. And it grew and it grew and it grew. And that mine has generated over $1 billion of value. And it's got another 500 mil of value based on reserves. And Franco paid $2 million up front, and their costs never changed. They never paid any additional money. So the higher the price goes, the more value that they generate from their royalty. And because, you know, the miners, right, like I said, when the price of gold goes up, the costs go up. You know, on a per share, on a margin basis, their margins are no higher than they were 20 years ago because they suffer from cost inflation. The other thing regarding royalty companies, you can manage them with 3, 4, 5 people. You got a geologist, you got a financial guy, you got a lawyer, and I don't know, someone to pick up the phone. So your overhead is very low. So they are able to share that. Their G&A is very low, so their profits go straight to the bottom line, back to shareholders. Royalties share at no cost to exploration upside. You know, you look at Goldstrike, 50,000 ounces a day back in the 80s, and they kept finding gold and finding gold and finding gold. They get all that exploration upside. The mining companies have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to explore, to grow their reserves or maintain their reserves, and the royalties get all this stuff for free. And then one of the other reasons is the big fish always eat the small fish in the royal industry. There's a lot of smaller royalties. And, you know, I've seen tremendous amounts of acquisitions over the past few years, because what happens is the big guys, they're busy. They focus on, you know, deals, hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars of value. The smaller ones, they don't care about. They're just too busy. But the smaller royalties do. So they'll go after and they'll assemble a portfolio of, you know, smaller royalties that they're paying, you know, 500 grand a mil, a couple mil, maybe 10, 20 mil for it. And then what happens is when one of these assets gets lucky and starts growing and turns into a significant amount of potential free cash flow, then the larger cap miners become interested, and they come in and they swoop up all the smaller miners. Abitibi royalties got snapped up, Great Bear royalties, Mavericks, Nomad, just, you know, there's 10 of them over the past few years. And I tell you what, one of the companies I follow, Origin.
I met them.
Origin Gold, Patty.
I interviewed Patty. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I've been following them really closely, right? And they are prospect generators. They'll go out and actually, you know, do their geological due diligence and go stake areas, and they think this looks good, and they don't, you know, they don't spend too much. They explore, and then they will sell that asset off. They'll option it, and they'll retain an NSR. And one of their NSRs turned into Santa Elena. They got a 2% NSR in Santa Elena that First Majestic owns. And they're getting, I don't know, $6 million a year from it. And First Majestic just announced a big discovery at Navidad, which is, I think, to the east and lower than Santa Elena. So so Origin's going to get all that as the mine continues. It was only going to be a 5-year life of mine. Now it's going to be 10 or even longer. So that increases the money that they get. But the real interesting story with Origin, and the thing is, Origin, it was quiet for years. You know, you're just waiting for something to happen. At the beginning of this year, they have another asset called Silicon and Merlin. And AngloGold is the owner. AngloGold came out of nowhere, and they announced that they discovered 13 million ounces of gold at Silicon Merlin. And then they released a rough economic study. This mine's going to produce 1.8 million ounces in the second year of production. It's going to be one of the largest mines in the world, and it's moving fast. AngloGold was doing a geotech study in order to find water, so to make sure it was they were going to be able to mine there to support production. They found more gold. They're drilling for water, and they found more gold, like hundreds of meters of, I don't know, 2 gram a ton gold. The project, it's only been basically, they've been drilling for a couple of years, and there's so much potential for upside there. But that royalty is ridiculous. And Origin is represent. It's a crown jewel royalty that you can build a large company on. And, you know, I think Origin's going to be taken out over the next, who knows, but it's just an amazing. Silicon Merlin and the NSR is an amazing asset. And I know the larger royalties are drooling over it.
Yeah. Let me ask you here on royalties, and I'm trying to find the downside, and I'm curious of what your answer would be. What is the downside of a royalty company? So I have my 80-year-old mother who invests in gold stocks, and I'm telling her to invest in royalties here, and I sent her a few, but I mean, I'm trying to find the downside. What's your, what would you tell me?
Some smart money that I talked to, some hedgies out of New York and stuff, they're like, oh, royalties are overvalued. And I'm like, they're overvalued for a reason, because they're the best way to play gold. They trade at like a 20x operating cash flow multiple, whereas the miners only trade at like a 6x cash flow multiple. But for those reasons why I gave you, they got fixed costs, minimal people, the big fish eat the small fish. And then also they offer better diversification, right? They own hundreds of royalties. All they need are one or two to get lucky in their leases. Whereas a miner, if they have trouble at one of their mines, it is game over. The equity is
screwed
up. You know, we saw that with, what was
in,
it?
In Victoria, it's Canada.
Yeah. Old. Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, the hit on is that they're overvalued, but they're overvalued for a reason, and I'm good with it. They should be overvalued.
Yeah, that's a good answer. And I'm still trying to get a good answer. And that's, I think you're right. I think that's the best answer. And that's the only thing I can think of is just the valuation. Why would you, I think it's a great way just to play gold in gold stocks. It's just royalty companies. If an investor wants to do that. And maybe this is not really a negative, but maybe you don't have the upside that, like, you're not going to get 100x or 500x with some of these, you know. That's the other reason that I thought of. So
in a strong gold bull market, you know, the miners and the explorers, they're going to explode in value. The royalties will go up, I don't know, to 2x, 100%. It would be a slower rise in a major gold bull market. But these gold bull markets, they only occur like 5% of the time or less. So that 95% of the remaining time, royalties outperform gold stocks.
Yep.
They outperform everything else.
Yeah. So. Excellent. Well, Garrett, I've taken way too much of your time. I think we'll end on there. I want to thank you. How can people, if they're not familiar with your work and not familiar with you, how do they reach you and learn more about you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Garrett Goggin at Twitter. I'm posting a lot about the miners all day long. And then go to Golden Portfolio, where I sell the Golden Portfolio letter as well as the GP 10X letter. And we're coming out with a new one, the GPIB, which contains my four best ideas very soon, later this month. And we offer, put your email in there and you can get my free Secrets of a Mining Analyst Masterclass. It's like six emails, tell basically what I've talked about today, what I look for in investing in gold miners and silver miners.
Excellent. And I want to let everybody know that Garrett is extremely responsive and very gracious. He was to me. So I want to, again, thank you so much for that. Garrett, we'd love to have you on again, maybe next quarter sometime. And we'll just see where we're at with all of this.
Good. Love to do it.
All right. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.